Hello and welcome to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. I'm your host, Attorney Ethel Mitchell, and I am really glad to be here again. We're going to continue this conversation. Welcome to all who are listening throughout the world on WOL 1450 AM, WOLDCnews.com, and LawTalkWithEthelMitchell.com. This is a call-in program, so if you have a call, and I think we do have a call, please do call in at 1-800-450-7876, and I will be glad to do my best to receive your calls and to answer them. But please remember, whatever you hear on the program is for information purposes only. This program is for information, it's educational, but there is no attorney-client relationship that's established. Every person's circumstances really are different, and you must seek individual counsel for any situation for which you need legal advice. Daryl Farley, my engineer, is here to receive your calls, and I understand that we have a caller on the line. Is that right, Daryl? Good morning. You're on live. This is Attorney Mitchell. How can I help you?
Good morning. This is Ellen. I'm asking, I guess, the last segment regarding the signatures on a will or whatever, and there have to be two valid signatures. If you go in and you make a change, do you still have to go back and get two signatures?
Yes. And not only that, you cannot make a change on the same document. Do not, the wills are not documents that you can mark through and initial.
Uh-huh.
It will invalidate the will. The way in which you change a will is what we call a codicil. Okay, a codicil is the name of the document that lawyers prepare to amend a will. Even if it's a small amendment, it's really important. And the codicil, and you're right, the codicil has to be not only two witnesses, not only do you have to sign it and have two witnesses to your signature, it has to have what's called that attestation language, where you all attest that the person signing the will signed in front of the two witnesses and the two witnesses signed in front of them.
Okay. Now, does that also apply if you change a beneficiary? You still have to go back and get two signatures, or how is that done?
It depends on the form. A beneficiary designation is almost always done on the form that's sent to you by, you know, the bank statement or the insurance policy or the retirement, you know, account. Those companies have their own forms. The, like Figley, the Federal Employee Life Insurance, or TSP, those kinds of companies have their own forms that they require you to use to change a beneficiary, okay? And so you have to use whatever their form is.
Right. So I guess what I'm more or less understanding is that whenever you make any change or anything on the original, you have to go back and start from scratch.
Yeah.
You have to go back and get a, let's say, some person signed it the first time, but you want to change the second one, but you have to go back and get that other person.
No. That's not correct. When you have a will, let's say you had a will and you had a witness, to two witnesses, when you make the change to the will, you don't have to have the same witnesses. No, ma'am.
Okay.
You can use different witnesses. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. You don't have to have the same witnesses. No. But it does have to have that language in it, what we call the attestation clause. That's real important.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for calling.
Sure.
Yes. Have a good day. Yes. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. Please call in with your questions. Those are the kinds of things that people need to know so that they do it right. The thing I want you all to understand, if you're listening to me, is wills are documents that are followed after you are dead, okay? And so the courts and the law are very particular about the format and the way in which it's done. There's no way for us to know if some part of the will, let's say you said, you know, my house goes to this child, And now when we get your will, it's been marked out, even if somebody puts your initial on there, if that was really you saying that. So the courts will not accept that. In fact, they may invalidate the whole will if you do it like that. And that's why it's required that either you do what we call a codicil, that's the correct term for it, which is an amendment to the will, and that you have it signed and attested to. And the attestation is so important. That says in its terms that you signed it in front of the two witnesses below. You knew what you were signing. You were in your right mind, basically. I'm paraphrasing right now. And that the two witnesses signed in front of each other, and they signed in front of you as well. The testator, we call them. So those are really, really important things that a lot, it's the little things that can foul you up when it comes to a last will and testament. And that's why I strongly, strongly recommend that you let a lawyer not only prepare it so it's prepared properly, but actually supervise the execution of it. I very rarely mail somebody their will or their trust or even their power of attorneys to be signed, or simply because so often they're not done right. And it can be a simple thing that's just overlooked. I'm not trying to say I'm totally perfect or anything, but at least I know what to look for. And if you're sitting in front of me in my office, I can make sure as best I can that it's done right. If you're doing it in your home, even with the notary public there, even with your two witnesses, you may or may not do it right. And like I say, when it comes time to use it, you're often dead. So that's why I strongly recommend that you let a lawyer do the work and supervise the execution, okay? Even lawyers who mail the wills to you for you to execute, send it back to them and send a copy back to them and have them tell you it was done right, okay? At least do that. That is so important, because if it's not done right and you're dead when it comes up, there's nothing we can do about it. Nothing we can do about it except fight with your heirs, or, you know, your distribution or your estate could be distributed in ways that you really did not intend. And now you've got all kinds of attorney's fees and people fighting and, you know, a lot of delays and court costs and so forth that could very easily have been avoided. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. And I want to welcome you again to everyone who's listening live, whether it's over the radio or over the internet. You can go to lawtalkwithethelmitchell.com. We have a whole new redesign of the website that's going to come out hopefully this week. And it's really beautiful. I love it. My webmaster, with Outlook Bench Group, is just great, and I'm excited about it. You can call me at 1-800-450-7876, 1-800-450-7876. Even now, you can go to the website, and the programs are archived there, just like they will be on the new site. But please go and sign up. Give us your name and your email address so that we can send you out what's called a MailChimp that says what programs are coming up, who are going to be our guests. We're going to have Attorney Michelle Hallman come back on shortly. She was the tax lawyer that was so good I think it was last week, if I'm not mistaken. She's going to come back and talk to us about scams that people are doing with a lot of people, especially elderly people, claiming to be from the IRS or tax professionals, trying to get you to, you know, give them money and so on like that. And she's also, if you recall, she talked about the tax implications, capital tax implications of selling property that you've either inherited or got long time ago or paid long time ago, very little, and now it's selling for a lot of money. We didn't even get into talking about what happens when you sell property that either is not your home or as rental property. That's a whole nother subject matter. So I've asked her to come back because it's really important that you understand that. But please remember what you have heard on this program is for information and educational purposes only. There's no attorney-client relationship established by anything that's said on the program. Each person's circumstances really are quite different, and so you must seek individual counsel when you need legal advice. Again, you can call in at 1-800-450-7876, or you can call me for advice and have a consultation. Come in, bring your documents. Let me just look at them. If they're fine, I will tell you they're fine. Trust me. If they need to be changed, if there's any change that needs to be made, we'll talk about it. We'll make those changes. You can call me at my office at 240-638-2828. 240-638-2828. Now, we're going to talk about important things that everyone should be sure of, but I want to repeat a little bit of what I said during the last program because it's important. I'm beginning to see more of that in my law practice because this is the only kind of law that I do. I concentrate on wills, trusts, power of attorneys, and helping people administer estates. When your mother or your father or your uncle or your godmother says they have a will, ask them to see it, okay? Tell them, Mom, Dad, I don't care what you said. And the lawyer said, you can blame me. I don't mind. Blame me. The lawyer said it needs to be reviewed. I'm not asking to make any changes, to the terms of it, but it needs to be reviewed to make sure that it is valid. That's the initial thing. To make sure it's signed correctly, there are, signatures, two signatures, the attestation clause, the residuary clause, the date is on it. Just notarizing something does not cure defects. Okay, that's a common misconception. They kind of feel like once we notarize it, then that solves it. No, it does not. Not when it comes to a will. You want to make sure there are no marks on the will. You want to make sure there's no scratch outs, even if they're initialed. Okay, you want to make sure that the will is valid. It is worth it, trust me, to get that straight while the person is alive. Often it cannot be fixed once that person dies, okay? If it was not done by a lawyer, you want a lawyer to take a look at it. If it was not, the execution was not supervised by a lawyer, you want a lawyer to look at it, please. You can call me at 1-800-450-7876 while I'm on the radio, or you can call me at 240-638-2828. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. If you want to come in with a consultation, there are things that you need to know. You want to look at the terms of the will, your own will or their wills. You want to make sure, are those terms still current or they might be out of date? There may be somebody that's named in the will who has died. There may be somebody that's named in the will that the relationship that they have with them has changed. And so their wishes have changed. You have to do this while the person is competent. You cannot change a will for somebody else. You have to do it while they are competent. Maybe they no longer own property that's named in the will. Maybe they've purchased new property that's named in the will. Maybe the person that they named as the executor or the personal representative has died. Or maybe they have moved on and there's a different relationship with them. In a lot of cases, people have died or divorced or, remarried somebody else. All that needs to be looked at and corrected if need be. Maybe new children or grandchildren have been born that they want to make sure are beneficiaries of the will or of the trust. The tax laws have changed tremendously recently in Maryland, in D.C., in Virginia, all over the country the tax laws have changed. Many people had trusts that were created, 10, 15, even 5 years ago that had what we call AB trust in them, where we were trying to save taxes for people. And now the tax exemption has gone up to $5 million. per person. And so you don't need all that anymore. And so you may want to come in and have your trust revised or restated, amended, to take out all that language and to put in something that's often much simpler and will accomplish the objectives that you want and not create a whole lot of problems for your family. These are all really important things. So please, at least every 5 years, review your documents, have somebody review them with a lawyer. Again, you can call in to ask me questions at 1-800-450-7876. Daryl is here to receive your calls, or call me for an appointment at 240-638-2828. We've got to take a break right now, but then we'll be right back. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell.
If you died tomorrow, could you?
Welcome back. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell, and we are answering questions and giving information that about wills, trust, and estate planning. We welcome your calls at 1-800-450-7876. And I understand we have a caller on the line. Good morning. You're on the air. May I help you?
Good morning. This is Patricia.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good now that I've gotten through to you.
Oh, thank you. How can I help you?
I need to know. I have some property in Louisiana.
Oh,
and,
Lord.
My mother's 97, and her sister died, and she has the only two left. So who does the property belong to? Who does the property belong to? It belongs to the family, but can she go and check on that?
Oh, definitely you can go and check on it. I mean, clearly she's an heir of somebody, or you are an heir. And let me explain something. All property records are public records, okay? Please understand that somewhere, even in Louisiana, there is a record that says this property belongs to somebody. If you don't mind me asking, what part of Louisiana?
Plaquemine, Louisiana, Abigail Parish.
Oh, yeah. You know I grew up in Morgan City.
You grew up in Louisiana?
I sure did, in Louisiana, sure did. Yes, I did. Very small world, and went to high school in New Orleans. I sure did. I sure did, and
we have property there.
Okay.
But we don't know, is the person who owns the property?
Well, okay, let me explain something to you, something else, too. Every state governs the property that is within its boundaries. And by that I mean you need to look to Louisiana law to decide who owns the property there, and even more importantly, how that property is to be transferred into people who are alive. Okay? So you need to, number one, if there's anybody there or there's a lawyer there that you can get, they need to first go to we call it the Recorder of Deeds here, I think it's called the same thing, but I'm not sure in Louisiana, and get a copy of the deed. Okay, somewhere there's a copy of a deed. The deed might still be in your great-grandmama's name. You know what I mean? But whatever it is, whoever is the last title holder on the public record of that property, you need to find that out.
Who's the last title owner?
Whoever's name is on it, in other words. Who do the records say own that property? Get a lawyer in Louisiana to find that out for you.
Have we get a Louisiana lawyer?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Can you do it?
No, ma'am. No, I'm not a member of the bar in Louisiana. And Louisiana has French law. It is different from every other law in the country.
So it's different from any other law?
It is, but it is still a public record. Okay. It is still a public
record. Would you recommend somebody that check with?
Oh, Lord, no, I don't know anybody offhand. My whole family has moved now from there. They're in Texas now.
Could you think about it and I'll call you later? And give me a
call me at the office at 240-638-2828.
240-638-2828. Yes, ma'am.
630-240-638-2828.
What's the best time to call you?
That varies. But if you call me and you leave your name and number, I will call you back. Okay? It may take a day or two, but I will call you back. But please don't call on the weekends. People call me on the weekends, and you know what I mean? So after Tuesday, call me, okay? But or on Tuesday and thereafter, call me, because I won't call back until then.
Say that you'll know it's me, Patricia.
Just say Patricia with the mother from Plaquemine Parish. I will definitely remember that. I'll remember you, okay?
So much.
Okay, you're quite welcome. Okay. And thank you for calling in, because that raises a real important issue that I see with a lot of people. A lot of people don't know what the status of their family property is. A lot of people, especially Black people, but we're finding Hispanic people and some white people, you don't know who owns your family property, and you need to know that. I mean, a lot of us kind of feel like, well, that's gone, or it's not valuable. You know, you would be surprised at how valuable a lot of property has become. I had people come in one time not so long ago that owned 20-some acres somewhere in Pennsylvania. Well, it happens to be near one of the most famous resorts in the world. It happens to be near, you know, several major tourist attractions. And so even though to you it may not be worth much, or when you bought it 10 years ago, it may not have been worth much, it could be very valuable right now. And so don't just let property go to waste. Don't just let property, you know, get lost from sales, tax sales and stuff. If you don't want it, sell it to somebody else in the family, or give it to somebody else in the family. And you do that with a deed. But you start by getting the title document, which is usually a deed, in on the record in the state where the property is located. And when I say title document, I'm not talking about the tax bill. A lot of people come to me and all they have is a tax bill. What you need is, this property was bought by so-and-so on such and such a date, and a description that lets you know what property they're talking about. You really want to get copies of that, and that is a public record. You may have to get a lawyer in the state where you are living or where the property is located. Sometimes title companies will do it for you. In some places, if you physically have somebody who will walk into the office and they can identify, I mean, it's a public record, so if you can walk into the office and tell them what property you're talking about, and or maybe the name of the person that you think is on it, a lot of times the clerks can just pull it up for you and give you a copy. Like, it's all it, and don't worry about there being a mortgage or anything on it. It's still a public record, and anybody, not just you, but anybody can get a copy of it. Like here in D.C., you can go right down there to Southwest and say, this is my address. I want a copy of my deed. And they'll pull it up for you. It might be $5. So get the names. I want us to start preserving and conserving our property. This is our legacy. Our forefathers literally died, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, literally, for a lot of this property. And so it behooves us to honor it and to at least try to preserve it. And if you don't want to do it, do a deed to somebody else in your family, preferably, that does want it. You can just have a deed that says, my interest in this property goes to somebody. Don't just leave it to be lost, or don't force a very expensive lawsuit about it. And don't wait until somebody dies to deal with this. It's so much property is being lost because of this. Anyway, this is Attorney Ethel Mitchell, and you are listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. We are talking today about important things that you need to know. Everybody needs to know important documents you need to have. And the kinds of documents that every adult needs to have. So, the title of the MailChimp that Stacy sent out this week was 10 things that you need to know about and you need to have. So those basically, and I'm just going to run them off real quick, and then I'll come back and and try to talk about as much of them as I can. But I welcome your phone calls because I can answer questions. Your call can help somebody else. So again, Daryl is here. Give us a call at 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. And let me just very quickly name the things that I really am going to try to get to as much as I can. Number one, you need to have a will, last will and testament. Everybody needs that. Number two, everybody needs a power of attorney. Number three, everybody needs a medical directive. Number four, if you own land, houses, the title to your property, you need to have a copy of your deed. And if there's any question about it, you need to have a lawyer deal with it and get it straight now. Okay, whatever it is. Number five, if you own a bank account, you need to look at that bank account. Make sure it says what you want it to say. If somebody's name is on it that you don't want, take it off. If you want to put somebody's name on it, put it on. Number six, what are the beneficiary designations that you have on your bank accounts? A lot of times we can avoid probate by having beneficiary designations. Number seven, if you have life insurance, what are the beneficiary designations on those life insurance policies? A lot of us start at work when we're 18 years old. You never change the beneficiary from your parents who are long dead and gone, okay? You've married or you've remarried. Look at the beneficiary designations on all life insurance policies. Do not, I repeat, do not put a minor's name on your life insurance policies. Come to a lawyer and let us help you to create the beneficiary designations that will do what you want them to do with reference to that money. Number nine, brokerage accounts. Who do you want your money to go to if you have an account at Merrill Lynch or Charles Schwab or E-Trade or any of these other brokerage companies? Most of them have what they call transfer on death beneficiary designations, and that's really, really important. I don't know which number I'm on, but anyway, same thing with your retirement accounts. What have you said with reference to the payment of your retirement account when you die? Those are beneficiary designations. Not sure what number I'm on, but if you have minors that are dependent upon you, how have you protected them? What have you done in terms of designations for your life insurance policies that you want to benefit them, or for the assets that you want to benefit them? Make sure those are done. If you have disabled heirs, God forbid, but a lot of us have heirs, people we love, who may have multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, may be developmentally disabled or mentally or emotionally disabled. There are ways of taking care of them, but you've got to do it. You can't just wish it, you know, and you've got to protect them. And again, like I said before, number 10, you want to make sure it's updated even if you've done it. So we got to take a break right now, but when we come back, again, I will go into more detail, and please feel free to give me a call at 1-800-450-7876. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. And we're talking about important documents, important things that everyone should have. We welcome your calls, and I understand we have another caller on the line, Daryl. Is that correct? Good morning. May I help you? This is Attorney Mitchell. You're on the air.
Good morning. It's Christine. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Christine. Thank you for calling.
I was writing down all those things that you said we need to have.
Oh.
Attorney, you talk so fast I couldn't get my fingers together.
I'm sorry. Okay, let me slow down. I'll repeat them again.
Well, now, I'm a little old. I can't get it that fast.
All right. Okay. All right. Oh, and you should know, I do have a website with all this stuff on it. If you go to www.willsandtrusts.net, that's W-I-L-L-S.
Okay.
A-N-D-T-R-U-S-T-S dot N-E-T. That's right.
Okay.
A lot of this information is there.
But not like you're giving it. I'll hang up and get get my ink pen and my paper and write slowly.
Okay. All right. I'll talk slowly. Okay. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling. I'm sorry. Okay. So number one, everyone needs to have a will. Okay. Everyone needs to have a will. That's number one. Number two, everyone needs to have a power of attorney. A power of attorney. Okay. Number three, everyone needs to have a medical directive. Okay, that's a medical directive. Number four, everyone needs to have copies of any deeds. How can I put this? You need to have records of your property when it comes to land or houses or how land that you're going to inherit, even that your parents have. You need a copy of your deeds. So if your family has land, like so many of us have, in another state, get a copy of the deed to that land so you really know what that land is, where it is, how much it is, and whose name it is in. If you have a home, you need a deed to your home. It is a public record. If you have land, you need a deed to that land. If you have a timeshare, you need a deed to that timeshare. So you need copies of all of your deeds. Number five, you need copies of your beneficiary designations. And that is for your bank accounts. If you have a beneficiary designated on your bank account, go to the bank and tell them to give you a copy of it. If you do not and you want to do it because they have forms right there. As long as they're adults and you want to get your property and you don't have a whole lot of different people on there, then you can put their name. And again, you have to, you know, when you do a beneficiary designation, that means when you die, these people get your money outright. There's no control. There's no holding it back. You just say, this is who I want to get whatever money is in this account. Get a copy of, it's called POD, payable on death, beneficiary. All banks can have them. Likewise, if you have a life insurance policy, you need to have a copy of the beneficiary designated on your life insurance policy. Okay, whoever it is, and it's wise to have somebody, unless you're trying to put it into a trust to preserve it for children or for someone and hold it for a period of time. You can just do that with the beneficiary designation. Okay, all life insurance policies have them. What you need to do for the policy is to contact the insurance company that, you know, if it's New York Life, whatever life insurance, the government insurance, whatever it is, get a copy of whatever the beneficiary designation is. If you've not done it, they will send you the form and you can do it. And I recommend that you make a copy of anything that you send to them, so that you have your records and expect to receive back a written copy confirming that they've accepted it and the change has been made. So you want a copy of your beneficiary designations on your life insurance policies. Okay. Likewise, when you have a brokerage account, it's called TOD. On the bank accounts, it's called POD. On the brokerage account, it's called TOD, transfer on death. Okay? So again, you can, if you have an account at Merrill Lynch, if you have an account at Prudential or Morgan Stanley, you should have, unless you, and even if you have a trust, you need to have on there transferred to my trust, you know, on the bank account when you die. You want a copy of that. Any retirement account, that is going to continue after your death, you need to have a copy of your beneficiary designation. You need to say who's going to get your retirement money when you die. Now, there's some retirement that stops, like a lot of pensions stop when you die. If you had made arrangements or you want to make arrangements for your spouse to receive portions of your retirement or your pension if you die before them, make sure you have that in writing. A lot of people are retiring from the government now and from other companies as well. And they have to check a certain box to say that they want to make sure that their spouse continues to receive some portion of their benefits if they die before their spouse. If that is your intention, make absolutely certain that you have a copy of that and that your spouse has a copy of that. Those are forms that have to be filled out, and you want a copy of that. If you have minor children or grandchildren that you want to benefit at the time of your death, make sure that your will or your trust has those provisions in it and that the beneficiary designations of the assets that you want to take care of them with say that they're going to be transferred at your death to the trust that you have created to do that. That's real important. You have to, those are contracts between you and the companies where you have your money, and you have to say where that money goes. All right? That's really important. If you have disabled heirs, you know, if you have persons who need help with managing their money, either because they are developmentally unable to receive money, they're physically unable to receive or to manage it, they are mentally or emotionally unable to manage it, or if they receive income-restricted benefits. And by that I mean a lot of us have children, grandchildren, loved ones, sisters, brothers, spouses even, who are on Medicaid or who receive SSI, Social Security Income Benefits. Those kinds of benefits limit the amount of assets that the beneficiary receives. And more importantly, there is a clause in there that says if this person receives a big inheritance, the government can come and take that inheritance. So unless you make provisions in your will and or your trust that says whatever I'm leaving for that particular person is going into a special needs trust, that's the kind of trust that you usually set up for them, then the government will come and they will try to get that money that you left for them in their inheritance. So even if it's your house and you say, I give an equal share to all of my children, the government has a right to come in and take that child's share, okay? If they owe or if they have been receiving SSI in particular or Medicaid, let's say they received over 5 years, $50,000 in benefits from the government, and now when you die, you leave them assets in your will or in your estate that's worth $35,000, the government has a right to come in and take those assets to repay themselves for the benefits that they received. So if you have heirs who are receiving income-restricted benefits, the special needs trust is really important, okay? So that the money that you leave for them or the assets that you leave for them will be available to pay for things that the government does not pay for. And your trustee is specifically instructed not to do anything that will interfere with the benefits that they receive from the government, okay, because they need those benefits. So I kind of went off on a tangent there a little bit about those things. But by and large, let me just repeat very, very, you know, together. You need a will. You need a power of attorney. You need a medical directive. You need a copy of your deed to any property that you own. And you may want a lawyer to look at that deed to see if you can make changes so that it will. There are all kinds of deeds that we can do nowadays that will, some of them will avoid probate, you know, and so on like that. But you want a copy of your deed. You want to look at that deed to make sure it says what you want. You want a copy of all of your beneficiary designations for your bank accounts, life insurance beneficiary designations, retirement beneficiary designations, brokerage accounts, we call it transfer on death beneficiary designations. If you have minors that you want to give money to, you want to take care of that, okay? You want to take care of that. And, of course, if you have disabled heirs, you want to take care of what you are leaving for their benefit. And all of these documents need to be updated as appropriate given the circumstances. So again, this is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You're listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. We talk each week about practical things that people need to know and do to secure themselves and to secure their legacies and their loved ones. You can call in to the studio right now at 1-800-450-7876. I'll be glad to receive your calls and give information and answer questions that you have. We're going to take another break right now, and then we'll be right back. Okay? Welcome back. You are listening to Law Talk with Ethel Mitchell. We're in the last part of the program, and I've been talking today about 10 things that people really need to know and do, and also about when you need to make changes or have your documents reviewed. This is all really important for each individual adult. Again, you can call in. I welcome your questions and your comments at or your questions at 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. Again, this is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You can go to my website at willsandtrusts.net. That's plural. A lot of this information is there. And you can give me a call at 240-638-2828. 240-638-2828 to have a consultation about this. I am glad to review your documents with you. Usually when people come, I send them a new client information form where you put down the names, addresses, and phone numbers of who you want to be your power of attorney, who you want to be your executor or personal representative, who you want to have your medical directive. That way you have it all in together once you come in. We don't have to start from scratch. I ask people to try to get a copy of their deeds. If you're in the D.C., Maryland area, I can often get those deeds on the internet. Virginia, I can't, but D.C. and Maryland, I can. And I can help you with that. If you have questions, please call in. We have a caller on the line, Daryl. Yes, good morning. This is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. You're on the air. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning, ma'am. This is Donnie. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine, thank you. How can I help you?
I'm calling because I have a couple questions. I used to sell life insurance, so I'm kind of familiar with some of the stuff you're talking about.
Yes, uh-huh.
I'm a younger person.
Okay.
I'm 31.
Oh, very good. Congratulations. I like to hear that.
Thank you. And thank you very much. And you mentioned, well, the first question is just the special needs trust.
Yes.
And then the next question was about if you have a spouse and you have a pension,
uh-huh.
and you want the spouse then to get the pension once the main income person, the person with the actual pension, dies.
Yes.
The question is, with that, well, that's the second question. If I have a pension and I put on the form, you know, it's called joint tenants or something like that.
No, it's survivor benefit.
Yes, joint survivor.
Survivor benefit, yeah. Uh-huh. You have to affirmatively select it. You have to select it on your benefits package, and I believe you have to do that before you retire. You should check with your HR department. That's really important.
Okay. Does the benefit go down if I leave it to my spouse after I die?
Yes. Often it does. I mean, again, it depends on your where you work at and so on like that. But number one, it doesn't kick in until you retire. Okay, let's get that straight. It doesn't start while you're working. This is a pension benefit that's available when you die. When you retire. So, you know, talk to your HR department, and I believe you can make changes up until the time when you actually are ready to retire. But you should do it now so that what they do, it's basically an insurance policy, okay? So if you say, I'm going to receive, you know, $2,000 a month when I retire. But if I want my spouse to receive money even after I'm dead, they're going to reduce the amount that you receive so that there will be money left for her to receive if you die before her.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what they're doing. Yeah, that's what they do. That's really what they do.
Okay, and then my next question, this one is more important to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
The special needs trust.
Yes, yes.
My question is, if I get benefits from the government, Medicaid, you know, and
SSI, yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, SSI and Medicaid. I thought that was free.
Well, it's free until you get money. But if you get more than, if somebody gives you more than, I think what SSI is $2,000, okay? With both of those programs, my understanding is that the receiver, the beneficiary, cannot have in their account more than $2,000 at the end of the month, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if your mama dies and leaves you $50,000 or an asset worth $50,000, you are no longer, one of two things happens. Either one, you are no longer eligible to receive those benefits, so they stop the benefits, okay? Or two, the government will go back in and say, we've paid you $100,000 over the past 20 years. We want that $50,000 paid back to us. And that's what they do. So what you can do when you are the person who is giving the benefit, let's say you are the parent and your child is receiving these benefits, okay? And let's say you have a big life insurance policy that you're trying to make sure that this person is taken care of after your death. What you do is you have a lawyer create for you what's called a special needs trust. And that trust, by its terms, says it's important, you know, my beneficiary is a disabled person. Often we use the language as defined by the Social Security law, blah, 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 blah. And they receive benefits that are income restricted. And it's important that those benefits not be stopped, but it's also important that what is left for her or him not be taken by the government because they couldn't survive without it. Okay? And so what you're saying, I'm running out of time. So basically what the special needs trust does is it says, this money, when I die, goes into this trust. My trustees authorized to pay for the things that the government does not pay for. So, for example, a lot of people need a special bed or could use a special bed or could use special therapy or may want to be able to travel or something like that. They use that money for the things that the government does not pay for. And the law has allowed, it's a very particular kind of trust, to keep that money in that format without taking it okay? And, or without stopping the benefits. But it's got to be set up before you die.
Okay, so the government will retroactively take look into my background, see if I've had any government assistance, and if I get an inheritance.
They can. But the government assistance has to be income restricted. It has to be like SSI or Medicaid, where you're not allowed to have a lot of money. You see, it's not any, you can get a lot of benefits, but it's the kind that you're not allowed to have a lot of money. If they've paid over a period of time those kind of benefits to someone and they receive an inheritance, they have the right to go back and take back at least up to the amount of the assistance that you received.
Okay, so what if I cut off the, my last question, thank you. If I cut off my government assistance right before I'm about to receive the inheritance?
They still have the right to do it.
How long do I have to cut off the assistance before?
I don't know the answer to that specifically, okay? But that's why you do the special needs trust.
Oh, yeah.
You see what I mean? That's why you do the special needs trust. But it's got to be set up before you receive the benefit.
Before
you receive the benefit, okay?
Yes.
Okay, we've kind of run out of time. I'm sorry. But give me a call at 240-638-2828, and we can talk about that in more detail. But this is Attorney Ethel Mitchell. I've got to sign off now. It's 10 o'clock. But come back and listen next week, and we will have some more really good information for you. In the meantime, have a good week. Enjoy your holiday, and be safe.